I love the sound of breaking glass. J'espère que vous êtes bien à notre écoute. Notre lunchtime en anglais continue avec la chronique Breaking Glass de Dennis Bro. I need the noises of destruction.
This is Bro on the Global Television Beat, Breaking Glass. Today's episode, Canadian TV, chilling news from the frozen north, and Quibbling with Quibi, part two. In the spotlight this week is Canadian television in its varied forms as two series with exceptionally interesting seasons have just concluded. Cardinal, on the private network CTV, follows an Anglo-male and a French Quebecois female detective team investigating serial killings in the frozen mythical hamlet of Algonquin Bay in northern Ontario. The show has just wrapped after its fourth season, by far its most interesting, and in which it effectuates a stunning social twist on the trite cliche of the serial killer. The second series is Tribal, a pairing of a native female chief, also a detective, with a seasoned and at first cynical and racist male colleague who slowly begins to go against the predominant mood on the local Alberta police force and respect his partner's culture. Tribal, which boasts actors known to American and global TV audiences, Jessica Mitton from the CBC and American CW series Burden of Truth, and Brian Markinson, a veteran of Mad Men and many Canadian series, including the too quickly canceled The Romeo Section, is the second major series from APTN, the Aboriginal People's TV Network. APTN programming consists of North American Indigenous news and series, spotlighting northern Canadian regions, while also linking to other Indigenous peoples around the world, and particularly in Australia and New Zealand. The detective pairing in Cardinal, the lead detective John Cardinal, played by Billy Campbell from The Killing, and his partner Lise Delorme, Karine Vanesse from the ABC series Revenge, is a cagey way of producing a show that plays to both Anglo-Canada on CTV and French Canada on the channel Super Écran, both owned by the same company. Lise's Frenchness is not much remarked upon on the series, and the final season, which concentrated on her reactions to the case, is the exception, as her tenaciousness and compassion is usually outshined by Cardinal's obsession, in much the way in Canada as a whole, French Quebec is subordinated to its Anglo-dominant. The series, available on BBC4 and Hulu, is based on the award-winning novels of Gilles Blunt, with each season featuring a serial killer who Cardinal is particularly adept at and obsessed with tracking. The small town of Algonquin Bay has more murders per capita than possibly any town in the world, except those in Iceland, where its mystery writers have collectively killed off a high percentage of the population in a country where there are almost no murders. The first three seasons are mainly interesting for the relations between the two leads, with Cardinal moving in the course of the show from darkly obsessed to willing to acknowledge in the fourth season, at the urging of his daughter, that he has feelings for his intrepid partner, Lise. The murder element in the first three seasons is a sort of highly sadistic torturing of both the Algonquin Bay residents and the audience as the detectives pursue ever more perverse and ever less socially connected and defined killers. But something different happens in season four. And, as in the Icelandic series, The Valhalla Murders, the narrow serial killer motif begins to widen. The inciting incident in the killer's revenge trajectory involves the greed of the supposedly moral upright victims, participating in a scheme to rid the forest of its birds to make it available for logging. The killer's calling card is a feather to remind his victims of their part in this tragedy. The guilt in this last season rests not with a socially isolated, disjoint loner, but with the greed that is constantly engulfing Canada's frozen north, where the rush to strip the land of its minerals and its forests gains such momentum under the reign of the conservative Stephen Harper. The producing of the serial killer is tied to the larger issues of environmental exploitation for profit, and the perpetrators are not only the isolated individual, but a group of capitalists and their henchmen, a vast improvement and expansion of the possibilities of a tired tradition in the crime field. Tribal, available on Blu-ray and DVD from Netflix and Amazon, tracks the efforts of the local Calgary police to integrate the tribal police force into their ranks. The experiment, merely a public relations gambit to make it seem that the era of colonization is over, gathers steam, though, as the local chief Samantha Woodburn slowly and by example convinces her aging, world-weary, and broken partner Book Bukowski that her First Nations ways have meaning and value. Near the end of season one's 8 episodes, the series hits its stride. Book rises to the defense of his colleague as the Calgary Police Commissioner wants to cancel the project. In the highlight of season one, a now corrupt Native former lead officer delivers a monologue about the unequal and unfair nature of justice as it is meted out to First Nations people by the state in its embodiment in the local police force. Samantha attempts to prove him innocent of a police frame-up, and the guilty finger slowly starts to point toward the racist Anglo police force itself. This is the second series by showrunner Ronnie Scott, who also created Blackstone, about reservation lives and struggles, and which ran for 5 seasons on APTN. Tribal is a flagship show designed, with its crossover pairing of an Anglo and Native cop, to promote the network, partially funded by the Canadian government, and allow it to expand its work of countering the neglect and devaluing of the Northern Indigenous peoples as an excuse and rationale to pilfer their resources. Quibbling with Quibi, Part 2. This week, we'll look at Quibi form and content. The service is exclusively available and designed for mobile phones. It stresses what it calls turnstile technology, which allows the shows to be viewed in either horizontal, that is landscape form, which makes it more like a traditional, though tiny, screen, or vertical form, where presumably one could also run other applications underneath while watching the series. The service attempts to turn the limitations of mobile phone viewing into gimmicky bonuses so that, for example, the upcoming Steven Spielberg horror series After Dark can only be viewed at night. Of course, this also stresses the way that viewers are being monitored since their phones can only activate the show in the evening. Martin Scorsese's comments on the era of the superhero film and the age of streaming apply here. He called these films, produced by Katzenberg's former studio Disney, theme parks rather than the cinema of human beings trying to convey emotional psychological experience. Quibi series, on the other hand, are just single rides, reduced in their 7 to maximum 10-minute form to the ride alone. No buying tickets, no getting in line, no anticipation, just the ride, with almost nothing to show for it when the ride is over. The other innovation in the short form consists in possibly undercutting industry labor contracts, which have not caught up to this new technology, and provide reduced rates for workers employed in Quibi's entertainment bites, as opposed to longer form series. There is a possibility this loophole is what allowed the service to launch and produce so many series so rapidly. As Shoshana Zuboff says, these new forms of surveillance capitalism partly rely on outwitting regulation. By moving so rapidly, they cannot be evaluated and countered. She adds, in the absence of a clear-minded appreciation of this new logic of accumulation, every attempt at understanding, predicting, regulating, or prohibiting the activities of surveillance capitalists will fall short. As for the series themselves, it's important to emphasize that the high-end flagship dramatic series constitute very little of the total Quibi content, which is primarily what it calls news and features, as well as short-form documentaries. One of Quibi's innovations is raising the status of social media influencers so that their shows appear alongside recognized industry names. Prominent among these is the Rachel Hollis Show, where the host dispenses pithy advice to young mothers in the nature of, it's not the quantity of the time you spend with your kids, it's the quality. Says Hollis, as an influencer, what everyone dreams about literally is being an early adopter, the first person to step into the space. Hollis is the perfect Quibi representative, someone who values getting there first over making any positive social contribution, and whose dream life, her interior psyche, is given over to nothing but visions of her own empty success. She is in the postnatal field what Trump is to politics. As for the dramatic series, there's a possibility that the form could be valuable. The 20-minute podcast, from which the Amazon series Homecoming was adapted, made for very tightly constructed half-hour episodes of that series and enhanced its critique of the corporate over human values of the pharmaceutical industry. For the most part, that does not happen with the overly entertainment-conscious preoccupation of founder Jeffrey Katzenberg's Disney DreamWorks imprint on Quibi. So, the remake of The Most Dangerous Game with The Hunger Games' Liam Hemsworth as a Detroit down-and-out denizen of a decaying city willing to sell his soul to get the money for his wife's cancer treatment to corporate exec Christopher Waltz from Inglourious Basterds, who is sheltered in a gleaming tower, has some resonance with the contemporary situation. However, a more daring casting with an African-American actor in the lead might have resounded in the moment with the Georgia hunting and killing of an ex-investigator of the black jogger Ahmaud Arbery, and might have highlighted the way this kind of hunting of African-American men not only persists in the U.S., but is rationalized by the system, as the murderers in Georgia were only arrested 2 months after in the wake of a national public outcry. But this kind of envisioning, the subject of the film Get Out, might have upset the mindless entertainment formula that in the end may doom Quibi to irrelevance. Flipped, where two disgruntled workers decide to create their own home fixer-upper show, is simply Quibi nodding in its fictional series to the mindless decider and influencer mentality that it is also promoting in its nonfiction series. Sam Raimi's 50 States of Fright, in some ways, shows the real limitations of the form. The first series of horror episodes, which will highlight all 50 U.S. states, takes place in Michigan and incorporates elements of Raimi's own A Simple Plan, in this case centering around greed for gold, with the more traditionally spooky elements of his Evil Dead. The problem is that once you figure out what the horror payoff is for each episode, even an 8-minute episode begins to feel about 2.5 minutes too long. Quibi may be the victim of its own abbreviated form. Since there really is little development, the audience may wander, but Quibi will have done its job of further destroying our capacity for empathy, reflection, and commitment. The best of the opening round of Quibi's series is the teen murder mystery, When the Streetlights Go On, which, given the dark nature of its subject matter, which concerns teen murders, really would have been much better titled When the Streetlights Go Off, and which features, but does not star, Queen Latifah. The mystery is compelling, and the total length of the 10 episodes clocks in at about the length of a film. Here, the problem is the lack of development in each episode, which must climax and then restart, retarding any actual character deepening because of the addictive imperative of forcing the viewer to the next episode. As workers now are starting to deconfine, to come out of their homes, or for many, to continue to have to leave their homes to face unsafe working conditions and governments which do too little in the way of testing and screening, is there solace on the trip to and from their first and second jobs really to be Quibi? The lasting contribution of this service may be to convince more and more workers that they want more from the limited leisure time that is offered them than quick bites, which are really just mental junk food. For more reviews, go to Bro on the Global Television Beat. And this is Bro on the Global Television Beat, Breaking Glass, and signing off from war-torn Paris. Oh, change of mind,
something breaking glass. Dennis Bro is the author of Film Noir, American Workers and Postwar Hollywood, Class Crime and International Film Noir, and Maverick or How the West Was Lost. Is Hyper-Industrialism and Television Seriality the End of Leisure and the Birth of the Binge? Nothing new, sound of breaking glass. C'était Breaking Glass de Dennis Bro sur Art District. Très bonne suite de nos programmes, jazzistiques et artistiques, à notre écoute.